Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the July 7, 2019 session, focusing on Luke chapter 10, verses 1 through 11 and 16 through 20, Traveling Light. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Daniel Glaze.
And I'm Bert Montgomery.
Okay, so when you travel, do you travel light or do you carry a lot of luggage?
I'm at that age now, you know, I've got a CPAP machine. I'm an old man. So, you know, when I pack it, it takes up over half the suitcase. So, yeah, I travel pretty heavily. I carry lots of stuff. You know, 51, you got to carry stuff with you.
You're a young man.
Oh, no. I used to travel pretty heavy, but every time I travel now, I try to really be more succinct and concise in the way that I pack. So,
Daniel?
Same. Yeah. Toothbrush and a clean pair of britches is all you need.
You're good. See, I'm in the Burt Club. I'm the oldest here, so I'm allowed to carry more stuff. So, plus I have all my geek gear. So, you know, I carry the iPad, the laptop, I've got cameras. I mean, what do I take?
Have you ever not traveled with it, though? Let's be honest. This really has nothing to do with age, does it?
No, it really doesn't. Yeah, you're right.
You've got to have your toys, David.
Yes, I do. You know, because if you don't bring them, you're going to need them.
You're absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Well, we are still in Luke, and we have one of these passages today that is... You know, it's very transparent. It's one of these really familiar passages, and it's just easy.
Right.
Yeah.
Wait, I think I studied the wrong passage.
Wait, no. What were you looking at?
I think I got that backwards. Yeah. So while we're scratching our heads, Bert, maybe you can help us get started.
Yeah, I don't think so. Look, I was looking at a lot of commentaries on this, and different pastors and writers took different angles on this, because there's a lot in here. You know, there's some folks were focusing on the fact that Jesus was sending people out in pairs and making a big deal about the importance of partnership and missions. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. And some folks were talking about this, the whole idea that Jesus was going way beyond the typical 12 that we talk about. And in addition to them, finding 70 or 72, depending on which translation you're reading, people to send out in advance of them. And then some people were taking on this theme of traveling light and using stories of people who go hiking and you know how to carry just the very basic necessities and even less than that to be able to move around a lot. So there's a lot of ways we could talk about this text. But for me, as I read it, I just always, when I read this text, I always tend to focus on verses 5 through 16. And this is the section where Jesus says, whenever you encounter someone, go into their home, you say, God's peace on you. And if they're peaceful, the blessing will stand and they will welcome you in and you stay there. And you eat and you drink and you be their guests and don't hesitate to accept their hospitality. Just go be their guests. If you enter a town and it welcomes you, you eat everything, you just be there, you heal the sick, and you pronounce God's kingdom is here. But if you go somewhere and they refuse to welcome you, then you just go out in the streets and wipe the dust off your feet and keep going and let them be cursed. And that comes up later, the whole idea of being, even Sodom would have had it better than that town that does not welcome you. And you got to remember that Sodom, of course, the sin of Sodom was that they didn't welcome the foreigners and strangers, right? Mm-hmm. So then verse 16, then Jesus said to the disciples, anyone who accepts your message is also accepting me. And anyone who rejects you is rejecting me. Anyone who rejects me is rejecting God who sent me. All right, so that's where my mind always focuses. And when reading this for today, my mind immediately thought of two things. And the first one's a bit selfish. So if you don't mind, indulge me. I'd like to mention I have a new book out. And it's a collection of musings and sermons and other such things all centered around LGBTQ inclusion and equality from a distinctly Christian perspective. And it's titled, A Rabbi and a Preacher Go to a Pride Parade. Coming, and that comes from, the title comes from a story about me, a preacher, and my rabbi friend, and the fact that we really did go to a pride parade, and if I may borrow a phrase from the Flintstones, we had a gay old time. Now, the, later, who knew the Flintstones were so prophetic? Later next week, from the time we're recording this, I will be signing copies of that book at a religious conference. But up to this point so far, I have not been invited to talk about the book, read from the book, or do any type of book set signing in any church yet. However, I have been welcomed and made to feel very much at home outside of the church walls, in people's houses and community events among the LGBTQ community. So much so that this Saturday night, I have been invited to sign my books at an R-rated drag queen bingo pride fundraiser at the local tavern. Now, it's going to be loud, and it's going to be colorful, and it promises to be raunchy. And yes, these are my friends, and I love them, and they have opened their doors and welcomed me, a Baptist preacher, despite my being a Baptist preacher. So yes, I will be there at the drag bingo event, enjoying the company of my hosts and proclaiming God's presence in that place. Second, and I know this is not in direct keeping with the context of this passage, but nevertheless, it is haunting me as I read this text. I cannot help but think of the large numbers of people, 70, 72, 70 times 7, infinite large numbers of people that God is sending to my country, the United States of America, which boasts so often of our Christian heritage and of our being a Christian nation, untold numbers of people traveling very lightly, seeking to be welcomed and fed, and are not being received. And those that are received are being abused, neglected, left to die, sold to white families in adoption, and lost to sex and slave traffickers, or lost to who knows where. They can't even wipe the dust off their feet and keep moving. And I worry about the woes that Jesus proclaims to our nation, which will be worse than that of Sodom, for their refusal to care for the strangers and foreigners and the people God has sent to their midst. Now, I hate to end on an unhappy note. So let me end with a summary of our text from the Tennessee pastor and New Testament scholar Mike Smith. I really like how he wraps up this passage. He summarizes it this way. Get out among all sorts of people. Travel light. Do some good. Point to God. Keep moving. Learn along the way. And gather together every now and then with God and with one another. Share your experiences. Give thanks to God. And then head back out there. These are just some of my thoughts as we talk about this passage.
There's just so much in this passage about hospitality or the lack thereof. I mean, it's treated as both, I mean, hospitality as a virtue and inhospitality as a vice. Mm-hmm. And I guess I hadn't thought about, I mean, so often hospitality, you know, we treat it as, oh, it's just a wonderful thing. She has the gift of hospitality, and, or they're just so hospitable when you visit, or, but I mean, it's, this passage makes that serious, that it has consequences, how hospitable we are to one another.
And in this passage, the disciples or the people Jesus is sending out, he's not sending them out telling them to be hospitable. He's sending them out to live at the mercy of the hospitality of strangers.
Right.
To experience it from that angle and to live at it at that angle.
So I'm wondering about context here, and you know, in light of what we talked about last week on the podcast, those difficult sayings of Jesus, this is following that. We talked last week about how Jesus has his his face set on Jerusalem. So, you know, as they're making that journey, I'm wondering whether the immediacy of the situation, the we don't have much time left, whether that is at all at play in the advice Jesus gives to these followers that he, you know, the way he asked them to be hospitable to people he encounters, or as we see, to not be as hospitable, you know.
You know, Daniel, I don't know the answer to the question you're asking, but when we were talking about the text last week, I see an echo here, because there's that part of the text last week in which Jesus is turned away and not welcomed by a Samaritan community. And then immediately here he is telling his people, go out and live among people and let them welcome you or let them not welcome you. And so this is, to me, I see this back and forth of, we've experienced not being welcomed already. Now all of you go out and do it again and let people not welcome you. Hmm. And some will welcome you. And that's where you stay and reside. That's not really answering your question, other than it's just something that echoed in my mind from last week's text in relation to this one.
I think this is interesting. Because I have looked ahead a little bit. And Bert, your connection to last week has me, I don't know what we do with this. So last week, we have the experience of Jesus not being welcome into a Samaritan community. And then this week, we have Jesus giving instructions to his disciples, and he tells them what to do if they are rejected. But then next week, we're going to be looking at the Good Samaritan, a story about a Samaritan who offers hospitality to the man on the road. This is a theme, apparently, that we're working with. And reading them together that way does not simplify the message at all. It really makes it kind of complicated or complex.
You know, I'm just going off the top of my head here. I'm not looking at anything, but the general overall Lucan approach, Luke's gospel is very earthy, is very relational. And then the book of Acts, you know, Luke part 2.
Right.
The church is very relational. The church is selling everything they have and so that there's no rich and poor. It's in Luke, right, that the Lord's Prayer has debts, not trespasses. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes, yes.
Matthew's trespasses.
Right.
Luke is, you know, distinctly debts, what people owe you.
Mm-hmm.
And so the theme of relationship with one another is so heavy in Luke's approach to telling the story, both the gospel of Jesus and then the beginning of the church in the book of Acts. There's something about that that we shouldn't ignore. We should take note of.
Mm. And I guess y'all hang with me. I don't know whether this is going to make sense or not, but I'm wondering if Jesus trying to give us a clear picture or description of who the true followers or who the nature of his true family are. I mean, is he saying it may not be those who carry around the name follower of Jesus, but those who truly are engaged in works of justice, are hospitable people who take care of the foreigner among them. You know, we've got here in, you know, the previous passage, we've got Jesus saying, unless you are committed and all in, you can't be my disciple, unless you're willing to die. You know, even those who want to go and bury their fathers, that's having competing loyalties. You need to be all in. Here, he casts it in terms of those who welcome you or those who don't. If they don't, you know, you need to move on. And then in the Good Samaritan, we have those whom we would expect to help do not help. And Jesus says, no, this is really what a life of faith. These are the acts that should acts of mercy. Is Jesus drawing for us a caricature or a description of what it means to be a follower of his. And it's not necessarily those who just carry the label person of faith. Mm-hmm. People who wear the clerical robes, maybe, but those who do the stuff.
The hard stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what I'm getting at? I'm not saying that elegantly, but...
Yeah.
That's really interesting, taking the passages together. That's an interesting thread to pull.
Well, I'm careful not to say, you know, he's giving a picture of the true believers, because that kind of language is dangerous. But I'm just trying to pay attention to... I know that we should not take this as chronological history necessarily, but Luke is telling this story in a way, on purpose. Just trying to see what that possibly could be.
I do think that throughout all of the stories that Jesus tells and through all the things that we see Jesus do throughout the Gospels, Jesus is constantly painting a picture for us of what it looks like to follow Christ. And so I think that thread that you pull, I felt you pull back because you said, I'm not trying to paint a picture of like the perfect Christian or like how we're supposed to be. But I think that is what Jesus is doing. I think in everything Jesus says and does, Jesus tries to paint pictures for us about what it looks like to be a follower of Christ. What does it mean for us? Is it sell everything we have and give it to the poor? Is it love your enemy? Is it give thanks for your persecution because yours is the kingdom of heaven, or whichever one? Nobody quits me on that. And so it is this, don't go bury your father. You come and follow me. And it is, you look like the Good Samaritan next week. And then this week it is, you travel and you go and do, you share the gospel. And if people hear you, great. And if they don't, let it go.
You know, David Cassidy and our good friend David Adams studied under a great man, still a great man, John Hendricks, who is all about experiential learning. And I never got into a lot of this except hearing stories from the two Davids about it, but how he would create situations where you'd have to experience something, and then and you would create things for your youth groups and for your churches to experience something. And then, okay, well, it's linked. Jesus is giving them a bit of an experiential learning thing here, because throughout the Jewish tradition, the emphasis is always on welcoming the stranger, caring for the foreigner in your midst, because you were once aliens in the land, right? Going back to the Exodus story throughout the Old Testament over and over again. Remember, because you too were once a foreigner. And then here's Jesus saying, here, go be a stranger. Excuse me, I just hit my microphone. Go be a stranger and live at the mercy of other people's hospitality and experience that. And if they don't have, then if they don't welcome you, that's fine. But go experience what it's like to be at the mercy of someone's hospitality. Now you'll know what it's like to be at the mercy. So maybe you'll be more hospitable. You've experienced the need to receive hospitality, and then as you mentioned, the next lesson coming up will be the Good Samaritan. Here's somebody extending hospitality. Mm-hmm. You've experienced lack of hospitality. So this experiential learning, I think, is going on here. Mm-hmm. In addition to proclaiming the gospel that Jesus, that God is here. Does our PhD in Christian education want to chime in on that?
So I'll tell a story. There was a group of doctoral students and Dr. Hendricks who had been enlisted. This was a long time ago, to go to a camp, Ridgecrest, in fact, and then to Glorieta, and to do experiential kinds of events, some of which were probably more like guerrilla theater, where we would we didn't do it. We brought together the people at the camp. We would find people in the camp and get them to do the theater. And then in the evening worship service where everybody had gathered, we'd bring them up there and say, hey, you may have run into them to this today, and how did you treat them? What did you do? And so it was a form of experiential learning, and it was so cloaked. People didn't realize that they were part of a learning experience. And so one of the experiences, we had a whole batch of them, but one of them, we had encouraged one of our team members to dress like they were homeless and just lay on a bench in the park and just lay there, not interact with people, not cause trouble, just be there. And so it was really interesting, all the different reactions to that person there at the camp. But what was startling was a family walked by, engaged him in conversation, took him back to the place they were staying, had him bathe, and clothed him with their own clothes and fed him.
Wow.
And so he came then to the microphone that night in front of the whole assembly to tell what it was like to be treated that way and how the experience of their hospitality was such a gift and a treasure and transformative to him, even though he was actually playing a role. But I mean, it was a really interesting learning experience for the whole crowd, because we, you know, how many of us had walked by him and not engaged or had treated him differently? And it was, yeah. Guerrilla theater is not something I necessarily encourage everyone to engage in, but it was part of those camps. That period. They didn't ask us to come back and do it again.
Hey, but to your credit, they wouldn't have asked Jesus to come back either.
Well, it was a missions camp. And so part of our initiative was to help people experience what others experience in the mission field and in other cultures. And so like one of the times we actually sat on the floor in the cafeteria and ate our food. Not just us, but, you know, the people we had enlisted. Mm. And people were coming back, why don't you sit on the floor? Get out of the way. I'm going to trip over you. You're making a mess. We're like, you know, most of the world sits this way to eat, not at the tables like you are. So anyway, but experiential education can be very powerful because we realistically confront it and our own biases or attitudes come to light.
Mm-hmm. I am struck by, this is verses 10 and 11, you know, it's not just if people reject you, just pack up and move along, but to actually say the dust of your town that clings to our feet, we wipe it off in protest against you. I mean, it's like
a little Monty Python.
I was going to say it's the taunting, right? Go away, I'll taunt you a second time.
I was struck by that part too. I went back and read it while we were sitting here talking, because I think I was expecting, as I went back to read it, to kind of take in this idea that that everybody kind of has the right to listen if they want to listen or not listen if they don't want to listen, and for it to just kind of, when I went back and read it, I realized Jesus was being stronger than I remembered, which I found myself just kind of puzzling over it, going, what's happening here? But I do think it is that there is this condemnation. To be inhospitable is in direct contrast to what we read that Jesus teaches in any shape, form, or fashion. I don't care where you read in scripture, to be inhospitable is to be in contrast with the gospel.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think it directly works against. And I think that's something really important for us to talk about, right? Because we live in a time where if you live in a neighborhood that has garages in it, right? What happens when you get home? You drive into your carport and you pull into your garage, you close your door and you go inside and you don't come back out. And we definitely have these things to talk about around immigration in our country, but a lot of us can't even figure out how to be hospitable in our own homes.
Yeah.
Right. I think, you know, how can we even learn what it means to welcome the stranger into our country when we don't know how to welcome the stranger into our church buildings? I think this issue around hospitality is probably one of the most important issues that the church needs to talk about. you can find a lot of things in Scripture. You're going to be hard-pressed to find something, I think, that justifies being inhospitable. Now somebody's going to go and prove me wrong. But, it's so overwhelming, mm-hmm. the teaching to be welcoming to the stranger, to help the one who cannot help themselves, to make space in our own lives for the lives of other people in whatever shape, form, or fashion that looks like. I'm struck by that as well, Daniel.
Well, I have to agree with you, Nikki. From the Hebrew Bible all the way through the New Testament, it is a common message and theme. And in many ways, it's one of the most joyful things we can do, isn't it? I mean, to be hospitable, mm-hmm. to someone else, to offer that cup of water or that friendly smile, that kind word. I mean, it's not that hard. And it's actually, I think, something that brings not only the person who's being welcomed joy, but those who are expressing the hospitality. And likewise, we all know at some level the pain of rejection. Mm-hmm. And maybe through all of this, Jesus is reminding us that part of being a disciple is recognizing this God, that in spite of how we treat God, in spite of how we treat one another, this God that extends a welcome and hospitality and a smile to us. May we work this week to extend that same gift and blessing to others. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.